Hey, football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown in the game, but his teammate scores instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you a second chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. With BetMGM's second chance offer, you have a chance to keep the fun going after the first player crosses the goal line. Try a first TD score wager with confidence today. BetMGM, make it legendary. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This specific promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, Pennsylvania, Puerto Rico, or Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 for New York. 1-800-NEXT-STEP for Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 for Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-ALL for Iowa. 1-800-981-0023 for Puerto Rico. Existing customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards paid back and unrestricted withdrawable funds. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Today, we recap the Cubs series and preview the upcoming series in Cleveland against the Guardians. You're listening to the Bucko Banner podcast brought to you by the Just Baseball Media Network. Cue the music. Rocking 101, she compliment my taste. Whiskey in my lemonade, cause I like the way it tastes. Best seats at the Pirates game, they let me run the base. Yeah, my time is like my money, cause I can't afford to waste. Wifey is a lawyer, take my date to my dates. Order steak by the plates, and in case after case, run my race at my pace, clear the grass of the snakes. Welcome back to another episode of Bucko Banner. We are joined today by a special co-host. Actually, our very first guest on Bucko Banner, Coach Adam Cinco. Cink, welcome to the pod, man. Welcome back.
It's great to be back. It's honored, you know, be the first guest. Now get to be a co-host, you know. Step in for sure. I know he's having a great time in Europe, so happy to be here.
Absolutely. You know, I sure told me he was going to be away this week, so I had to find co-host or do it by myself. And I was like, well, I'm definitely hitting up Cinco. Because me and you have done a couple podcasts in the past too. And I know we can talk baseball for hours. And then on Sunday I have Noah Hiles. We're going to do a weekly recap and talk about the farm and everything, state of the organization. So you and Noah are actually the only reoccurring guests on Bucko Banner. So
I feel like slightly less qualified than Noah, but hey, like I said, it's an honor to get to do this with you.
Yeah, man. And you're sporting a awesome jersey, the 412 Pittsburgh jersey. That's sick.
Limited edition. Had to break it out.
So Cink, what's been happening, man? I know you're coaching at the Division II level. What does your off season look like right now? You getting ready for fall ball?
Yeah, we're ramping up this week, first week of classes. So guys, just, you know, coming up to the field, getting some swings in, you know, seeing the new guys for the first time, start practice next week. So, yeah, really looking forward to it. I think we got a really good squad. Brought in some transfers, some young guys that were got some experience last year. Definitely going to be relied upon. So, yeah, looking forward to it.
Love that, man. Love that. I follow the Huskies as much as I can, and I know you're going to be coming out to the Pittsburgh area this coming season. You're playing Seton Hill, and we got our friend another WNJ guy, Clay Martin, coaching for Seton Hill. So I got to see the boys face off against each other in Greensburg, and should be a fun PSAC matchup.
Oh yeah, interleague PSAC, nothing like it. East versus West. It's gonna be a lot of fun to, you know, coach against Clay, and you know, have you guys out there. It's gonna be a good series. So. Looking forward to that. Circled on the calendar.
Absolutely. Same here, man. And you know, I know PSAC baseball is premier in Pennsylvania, but there's also other baseball in Pennsylvania, believe it or not. We got our Pirates to talk about, unfortunately.
Maybe a little down on them right now, but, you know, we got a lot to talk about.
We definitely do, man. It's funny because you texted me when you knew you were coming in to recap the Cubs series, and you're like, wow, we got a lot to talk about. And boy, do we. Let's just start like on a positive note. We'll get into game recaps and complain and, you know, talk about what's wrong with this team. But the big news this week was that O'Neal Cruz is moving to center field. He's no longer a shortstop. I had mixed feelings about this. I'll state my feelings real quick. At first, I was like, really? Why not? It seems like it was inevitable that he wasn't going to be a long-term shortstop in my eyes, but I didn't think it would happen this quickly. They definitely have a center field problem. And as the more that I thought about it, I was like, maybe this is the best time to do it. Like, they're definitely not, they're for falling out of contention quickly. Why not get the reps now rather than next year when they're really opening their window, hopefully. And I think center field is going to be huge for his career if he can make the most of it. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I mean, as some of the listeners know, I'm actually originally a South Florida guy, and the Marlins did the same thing with Jazz. So,
yeah,
you know, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, you get an athletic guy who can, you know, his sprint speed is elite. You know, you can go track it in center field. You know, I mean, let the bat play even more. Don't get as much, exposure to the defensive lapses that should get at shortstop. And, you know, he definitely is athletic enough to make it happen. Just getting the reps, like you said, Jazz, if you guys remember, when he first couple games, it looked pretty rough out there. But, you know, towards the end, middle to the end of last year, of what they were calling the experiment of him playing center, and he got a lot better and was really well above average center fielder going into this year. And I see O'Neill, you know, kind of being on that same track. You know, the athleticism is off the charts. So, yeah, I think it's a good idea.
Yeah, before I talk about Jazz, because I want to touch on Jazz, I'm really excited about seeing that arm out in the outfield, because, you know, we already know the strength of the arm in the infield. Is he going to be like Brenton Doyle 2.0 out there, like with that gun?
Brenton Doyle, PSAC guy, by the way.
Oh, where did he go? Oh, he went to Shepherd, right? Shepherd. Yeah. I forgot they're PSAC now.
Yeah, they were Mountain East actually probably when he was playing, but yeah, Brenton Doyle, PSAC guy now. If you think about it, but yeah, he's Brenton Doyle's had an insane year. Offensively and defensively, one of the best center fielders in the league. I think O'Neill has that potential.
And we already saw it on display. We'll get into it. His first game in center field, he was charged with an error, which it wasn't the worst throw in the world. His Mike Rindall kind of booted it. But yeah, I'm really excited for that. And then Jazz is a perfect, I think Judge, like seeing him out there being a 6'8 guy, like he's kind of the, I don't know, the recipe or the example, if you will. I don't want to like compare the two, but there wasn't really an example for a 6'7 shortstop. That's what Shore and I would always talk about. Like, there is no precedent to compare it against, but you know, there are examples in the outfield, and I'm excited to see him grow there. Jazz is another guy. I just love his attitude when it comes to just playing wherever they want him to and just playing a role for whatever team he's on. Like, he embraced third base like no other, and he did pretty well since he's been on the hot corner, and his bat has been a spark in the Yankees lineup that is the perfect fit for him, because I thought coming to Pittsburgh might be tough if he was like in the spotlight, but being with Soto and Judge, like, I think he's just gonna thrive in New York. Not to talk about outside of the Buccos too much, but I think he's an example. We're bringing Jazz up because he's an example for it for O'Neill. So
yeah, and you know, I am a Jazz fan. I think he gets a little bit of a bad rap, kind of his aura and his kind of his flair, his flash can get him some attention. Some people think it's selfish, you know, but really you see what it is. It's real. It's genuine, and he's, like you said, he's more than willing to go play a different position that he's never played before, you know, go in and try to win the World Series with, you know, in the Bronx, which I know he's enjoying. So,
yeah, absolutely. And I've had my qualms with Jazz, yeah. But you know, I think it's real, and I respect it. So yeah, O'Neill Cruz, center field. He's played one game there already. Let's move on to David Bednar real quick. We're definitely going to touch on more of these in the game recaps, but David Bednar and Shore and I have talked about it at length prior to this episode, but especially at the beginning of the season when he came into the season not ramped up, right? He didn't really have much of a spring training, but they threw him right in the closer role. I think he was gravely mismanaged this whole season. He's been bad. He's got like a 6.3 ERA, and he's got a lot of innings under his belt. He's blown 6 or 7 saves already. It's been a tough watch, man. The command isn't there. The fastball ain't missing bats because he's not in the zone a lot. Like, it's tough. And my whole thought process as a former pitcher, as someone, especially at the college level, struggled with the mental side of pitching. You know, every guy's different. Okay. I think there's not a cookie cutter approach, as you probably know, to coaching. You have a lot more coaching experience than I do. You have to coach everyone on an individual level. We saw the Diamondbacks with Paul Sewald. He went through a struggle for a couple weeks, and they took him out of the high leverage roles. Justin Martinez was a blessing. They had another option there. But the Pirates, Derek Shelton, and everyone in the organization were like, nope, he's got to stay in that high leverage. He's got to have those reps. He's got to be there. But why? You know what I mean? Like, I think you could potentially be doing further damage to the guy. I mean, he's in his hometown, at his home ballpark that he grew up in, getting booed. Like, that's definitely not easy to hear. And I don't know what he's like with the mental side of things, but I think you could do more damage by leaving him in there. I don't see why they couldn't have put him in a lower leverage situation. I know the bullpen has been thin at times this year, but we had at times Holderman has been hot. Kyle Nicklaus and Carmen Majinski, I have really high hopes for them going forward. I just don't love how he was managed. And on top of that, and this is just, I know people don't want to hear this. This is hindsight 2020, whatever. I've been saying this for the past couple of years. They really missed their chance to move him. They really did. And I know people don't want to hear that, but you see what closers go for, high leverage guys go for. They could have gotten a ransom for him. And that's the biggest issue with this organization. They don't have assets. And when they do, they don't move them. So those are my 2 cents.
Yeah, I agree. I think the mental side is a big piece. I saw a funny tweet today, actually. It was like, if David Bednar wasn't from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, he'd be bagging groceries or something. Like, but they're like hanging on to him and giving him more chances because he's the hometown kid. And, you know, but, you know, you could be doing more harm than good, like you said. And, you know, there's no problem with hitting the reset button. You know, it's kind of like a hitter, you know, going down to the minors for a week or two. You know, make some adjustments, get your confidence back, and come back and maybe be the guy that you used to be again. But, I think a little reset, send him to the sixth inning, seventh inning role, couldn't do any harm at this point.
Bring him in when we're up 10 to 3.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, for an inning, like, get his confidence up. Just get him out there where he doesn't have to worry about closing the game mentally. But, you know, we're probably going to see more of that in the last month of the season. I feel bad for Bednar. I feel like he's been mismanaged. But, hey, nothing we can do now. We move on. Last point I want to bring up before we get into our weekly recap. Junior Vizcaino was our international scouting director. His contract is not getting renewed after this season. That was just announced. He's been here for 7 years. I'm going to be completely honest with you. I wasn't familiar with his name. I read Big Data Baseball when I was younger in high school. And Reen Gayo, I'm probably totally butchering that name, but he was a big name who brought in Starling Marte. He signed a bunch of big names, and he was fired. And then Vizcaino followed him up. The only player that has reached a major leagues that he has signed, I could be wrong, but I read this on Twitter today, was Luis Ortiz. And Luis Ortiz was someone, until they brought in Dewey Robinson, I don't know if you're familiar with Dewey Robinson from the Rays organization, he's a pitching guru. Until they brought him in, they didn't really know what they had in him, because he like went around to all his affiliates. I heard a story a while ago. He went around to all the affiliates and he was just like, your best arm in your entire system is this Luis Ortiz. And I think it was Charrington said, who? So
I have your GM say who.
Yeah, exactly. So that was a find. But other than that, like, we see some of our recent international signee guys
Shaylin Polanco is a big name down in Bradenton. He's hitting like 156 this year or something like that. And he's played his full season at Bradenton. We've got Tony Blanc, who's in the complex. We don't really know what we have with him yet. A couple other guys. I know I'm missing names. But a lot of the guys have been successful internationally that have come over to this organization have been acquired via trade, have not been signed by him. So that is an area that I think player development lacks in the, across this whole organization, but that's definitely an area, if you think about it, that needs to improve within the Pirates organization.
Yeah, I mean, you see how many stars are Latin guys. I mean, you can there are countless amount of guys from the DR, you know, Venezuela, Puerto Rico that are future stars of this game, and it's a market that you have to tap in this game to be successful, you know. And if you can't bring in guys from, you know, international signings and develop them in the stars, that you're going to be behind the eight ball. So I don't blame the Pirates for making this move. Hopefully the next guy they bring in is better and start that pipeline again from
DR. Absolutely. I mean, you see organizations like one that sticks out to me is the Yankees, and even I think the Guardians too are big in the international market. The Yankees Cashman loves trading for international pool money. He loves going after the big names, Dominican. I mean, he's missed, but he's definitely hit on a ton. I'd like to see the Pirates exploit that market. And it's tough scouting 15, 16 year olds, but other organizations have figured it out. So, Adam, let's go into our weekly recap. I'm going to quickly go through the roster moves this week. And then we're just going to go right into game recaps. All right. So first things first, and we may have mentioned these in the last episode, so apologies for repeating, but Joey Bart was placed on the 10-day IL. So Henry Davis was recalled. He's had a great year at AAA, but, you know, as we've been seeing and hearing, there has never been a bigger difference between AAA and the major leagues. It's a big jump, and he doesn't seem to have made adjustments every time we've seen him come up. So, I mean, he's our 1-1 pick. I'm hoping for the best with him, but you need a big month out of him. Need to see improvements here going forward. Big opportunity for him. Huge. Nicky G was reinstated from the IL. Jake Woodford was DFA'd. He came up. They acquired him from the White Sox. Made a few starts, look good at some times, look bad at others. So Jake Woodford is no longer with the organization, as far as I know. And then Jared Jones and Carmen Majinski were reinstated from the IL to make room for both of them. They optioned outfielder and Chiwon Bey. Hallelujah. I was so tired of watching him play center field, man. It was rough. And Brady Feigl is DFA'd. A really cool story. I don't know if you heard about him, but 33 years old, 34 years old, making his major league debut. Lefty who threw hard. Actually, Jack from Just Baseball, he was the one who told us about him. He was like, look at Brady Feigl. Like, he's killing it at AAA. He's the broadcaster for the Indianapolis Indians. Brady Feigl is nasty. He got his opportunity. Statistically, it didn't look good, but, like, it was a really cool story. So, let's go into the game recaps. Game one, Monday. I was there. That was the only Cubs game I attended. It was a rough one. 18-8 was the final score they lost versus the Cubs. Mitch Keller went 4 innings, 3 earned runs, 2 walks, and 4 Ks. Not a horrible outing, but not his best. He had 97 pitches in 4 innings, so he was just taxed. Only generated 9 whiffs, 3.84 ERA after this one. Domingo Germán came in, 2 2/3, 6 hits, 8 earned runs, 4 walks, and a homer. Do I need to say any more? Brady Feigl made his debut, 1 2/3, 7 hits, 6 earned runs in his debut. And Rowdy Tellez, who's been our best reliever as of late, 2/3 of an inning, 1 hit, 1 earned run, 1 walk. Brian Reynolds contributed a home run. He was 1 for 3, hit his 20th of the year. Connor Joe had a pinch hit home run, his 8th. Nicky G went 2 for 4 in his return from the IEL. And Triolo and Rowdy each collected two hits. So Rowdy is a two-way guy now. G1 Bay dropped a line drive in the second. It was a Nico Horner line drive. Would have been caught by probably 99% of the center fielders in this league. 13 hits total on the game, 2 for 10 with runners in scoring position, 7 left on base, 6 Ks. Cinco, we always recap the hits, left on base, runners in scoring position, and Ks, because that has seemed to be a pattern with this team offensively. K-ing a lot, not moving runners, leaving guys on base. They're notorious for guys on second and third with less than two outs, not moving them. They don't really do anything to facilitate runs. Obviously we can point fingers at Andy Haynes, but which is deserved, but it's also probably a roster problem too. So do you have anything on this game one here?
Yeah. I mean, first of all, as a hitting coach, I get it. I mean, I've had teams that have struggled to score at times, and hitting is hard, so you have to have a plan B for when you're not swinging the bats hot. You have to be able to find different ways to score. You got to move runners. You have to, I hate to say it, but you have to bunt sometimes if you're not.
Have you seen the Pirates bunt?
No.
That's bad. Yeah. But go ahead.
Yeah, got to find different ways to score, manufacture runs if you're not swinging the bats. And, when nothing's really clicking, it can be tough. So, I definitely get it, but you got to find ways. I got a couple things. Brian Reynolds, like you said, homered in this game. Really just been consistent, Mr. Reliable all year. That's the guy in the lineup that you can day in and day out say, this guy's given us good at bats. Couple numbers for you from Baseball Savant: 88th percentile in expected batting average, meaning he's hitting the ball hard, good launch angles, a lot. 84th percentile ex woba, 82nd percentile hard hit percent, 79th percentile in launch angle sweet spot. Which, for those people listening, a launch angle sweet spot, meaning he's hitting the ball on a line a lot, right? So he's getting in that sweet spot in the launch angles between.
Would that be considered a barrel?
A barrel is the combination between exit velo and launch angle, right? So the LA sweet spot is, there's like a range. I want to say it's probably between 10, which is like a line drive right over the infielder's head, is about a 10 degree launch angle, between a 30 degree launch angle, which is kind of your home run type ball flight. So he's hitting the ball between 10 and 30 on a line, a lot, 79th percentile in the league. So, just to, give some analytics, some numbers behind his success this year, he's doing a lot of good things. Another thing, Cubs stole 8 bases in this game. That's just
8.
You can't have that. Free 90s, as a pitcher, you gotta control the run game. So free 90s, they come back to hurt you more often than not. So Yasmani Grandal was the catcher in this game. Happens to have the worst pop time in baseball.
Crazy.
2.1 second average, which is, we run showcases and camps. I'm going to see high school players, and there's a lot of high schoolers that are popping better than a 2.1. So, just not going to cut in the big leagues. And the Cubs, they steal bases, but not like at an insane clip. Horner will steal bags.
Crow Armstrong.
Crow Armstrong, one of the fastest guys.
I think he had 3 of them that game.
Yeah, he is. He's coming on, man. He is coming on. He started real slow, but he's swinging the bat, and his speed is electric. So he will do that to you. But that's what I got from game one.
Yeah, no, that's great, man. I think I love this because you're providing an insight that I'm more of a pitching guy. You're a hitting guy. You coach it at the college level. Great insights on Reynolds. Grandal, man, that stuff frustrates me because he's kind of viewed as a pitching whisperer in this league, and I don't really get why. I mean, he had his like peak years where he was getting MVP votes, but
got on base a lot. But
Yeah.
With the White Sox, yeah, there was always the meme from Moneyball where from the meeting. It's like, he's pointing, don't make me point at him. And it's like, what does he do? He gets on base. That's the Yasmani Grandal meme. But
yeah,
he is a good pitch framer. He's 82 percentile in pitch framing. So he's one of the better strike stealers in the league. But yeah, the pop time is pretty brutal.
Yeah, man, it's kind of tough to watch. And I know Skeens has really grown accustomed to him being behind the plate. He's caught every game of Skeens, if I'm pretty sure. So, you know, he's also been much better offensively this past month. I think he's hit like 280 over the last 30 games, which is good to see. But again, I'd much rather see those reps coming from Joey Bart and Henry Davis, which we will. Yeah. Let's go forward to Tuesday. 9-5 loss to the Cubbies. Jared Jones made his return. If you haven't yet, go get your Jared Jones merch on the Bucko Banner Store, the Natasha Bedingfield collab. Come on, it's gonna be hot in the streets. Jared Jones got a couple shirts himself, so you should get some too. Four innings pitched, five hits, five earned runs. Started off well for him. The last two innings, not so much. Three walks, four Ks, gave up two homers. His ERA is sitting at 3.88. He generated eight whiffs in this one. Jalen Beeks came in to spell him. He pitched a third of an inning. Jalen Beeks was recently acquired at the deadline. He, the guy that we gave up for him, Luis Peralta, who, fun fact, is actually Freddie Peralta's brother, made his debut with the Rockies this week in the bullpen. He has had an unbelievable year in AA and AAA. So kind of sad that we gave him up. I didn't even know he was in the organization, to be completely honest with you. But Jalen Beeks went a third of an inning, one hit, two runs, no earned. Ben Heller came in, two-thirds of an inning, one hit, two earned runs. And a K, Majinski, two innings, three Ks, two walks. Fine return for Carmen Majinski. Dennis Santana, who's been pretty decent as of late, an inning pitched and a K. And David Bednar threw one inning. O'Neill Cruz went 4-for-4 with a double and a stolen base. His 18th of the year in two RBIs. His average is at 271 as of this game. He's had a really solid offensive year. Really came into his own as of the last 2 months. Really excited to see him continue to grow at the plate. This has been his first full season in the majors. So it's definitely shown improvement there. Brian De La Cruz, who I know you're familiar with being a South Florida guy, he went 2-for-4 with a double and home run. His first home run as a Pirate, I think only his third extra base hit since being acquired, but whatever. Two RBIs. This guy swings at pretty much everything, and I know you know that. 10 hits total, 2-for-10 with runners in scoring position, 9 left on base, and 14 strikeouts. All I have for the Tuesday game, Sank, do you have anything on this one?
Yeah, Brian De La Cruz, like you said, starting to heat up a little bit. 11 RBIs over the last 2 weeks. So, you know, driving in some runs like he was brought in to do. Still would like some more production out of a guy you send, you know, pretty good pitching prospect away for. But
more efficiency.
Yeah, showing some signs turning around here. But, yeah, Jared Jones, I tuned in to this game in the fourth inning, the beginning of the fourth inning. I saw a zero on the board for the Cubs. I was like, man, Jared Jones, and he's cruising a little bit in his return, and then the wheels kind of fell off a little bit. Things that I saw, falling behind in counts, that's a big one. You know, getting bad counts as a pitcher, hitters are going to start to sit on stuff, you know, start to lick their chops a little bit in hitters' counts. So definitely want to get ahead, guys. But slider wasn't as crisp as normal. Command was a little bit spotty on the off speed. So really the Cubs were able to draw walks, you know, just not chasing that slider off the plate. And then they were just sitting fastball. I mean, that fourth inning, they weren't swinging at the slider. And any fastball they got in the middle of the plate, they were just pulverizing. Dansby Swanson, Seiya Suzuki both went Oppo Taco in the fourth inning, fastballs, middle, and looked like they were just waiting for them. They just weren't scared of that slider whatsoever, and led to that early pull after that after that last out in the fourth. So, yeah, I mean, you could expect a little rust from a guy coming off the IL. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see how he looks in his next outing and go from there. But, yeah, you can expect, you know, some issues coming off the IL. He's been gone for, a month or almost 2 months. So, yeah, we'll see how he looks in his next turn around the rotation.
Yeah, absolutely. I know they're trying to limit his innings too, so that's definitely part of it. But let's jump into Wednesday. Let's get through this last game here. Wednesday, they were up like 10-3 in the sixth or seventh. They lost 14-10. This was an all-time low for the Pirates. This was one of the worst losses, if not the worst one of the season. Paul Skeens started a game. I can't tell you how many games they've wasted, the quality starts they've wasted of Skeens, Jones, Keller. It's pretty frustrating, right? Five innings pitch, five hits, two earned runs, one walk, six Ks. This wasn't even his best outing. He still has a 2.23 ERA, 11 whiffs on 82 pitches. I've told Shore too in previous episodes, even his worst outings are like some pitcher's best outings. Like it's pretty impressive. Like the floor is so high because he has so much swing and miss stuff. Kyle Nicklaus went one and a third, two hits, two earned runs, three walks, a K, and a homer. Again, he's been really hot, but gave up two earned runs in this one. I know they've used him a lot. His ERA is at 3.38. Chapman, who's been really hot as well, went an inning and gave up three hits and three earned runs. Hasn't been like him as of the last month or so. And then we had Dennis Santana, who threw two-thirds of an inning of scoreless ball, and then David Bednar. This is where it blew up. Six blown save of the season. Two-thirds of an inning, couldn't even finish the inning. They were up 10-7 when he came in. Two-thirds of an inning, three hits, five earned runs, two walks. It wasn't pretty, man. It was, like, really hard to watch. It was like that Tigers series, like, second week of the season. And I was like, I had to turn off the TV. Like, this is hard to watch from a mental aspect. It was really tough. Jalen Beeks came in to finish it off, but he also gave up three hits and an earned run, man. It was bad. They lost the game. On the bright side, O'Neill Cruz debuted in center. He logged his 25th error of the season. Let's throw him to Grandal. He's second in errors to Ellie De La Cruz in the league. I don't know if you saw the throw. It was a rope. It was a good throw.
Exactly. Yeah.
Thank you.
That was the second play at the plate that I thought the catcher should have handled in the series. Game two, it was a play at the plate with Henry Davis, and should have came up with it. Same thing. Got to make those plays. I mean, you're a big league catcher. Got to be able to scoop balls that aren't perfect long hops. You know, so got to make that play. But
absolutely. Absolutely, I agree. And Cruz went 2-for-5 with a double, 113 mile an hour double, for what it's worth, and his 19th stolen base. I mean, I swear this guy hits a ball over 110 miles an hour almost every game. It's pretty incredible.
No, he crushes the ball. I mean, it's impressive watching him hit the amount of bat speed he has. You know, 100 percentile bat speed. 78.4 average bat speed, miles per hour. So the guy gets it through the zone like no one else, and you see the exit velocities kind of respond to that. Interesting to see him play center, you know, actually see it with your eyes, and it for the first game doesn't look bad. He's gonna be able to make the adjustment.
It didn't look unnatural, and the offense wasn't like horrendous. Like, we had Brian Reynolds, who was 3-for-5 with his 21st home run, 2 RBIs. We had Rowdy, who was 3-for-5 with 2 RBIs. We had Connor Joe, who has kind of gotten hot again, 3-for-4 with his 9th home run and 2 RBIs. 16 hits total, 5-for-19 with runners in scoring position, 14 left on base and 14 strikeouts. You can't win games with those numbers, but they had 16 hits total. So it just seems like a lot of scattered hits and not moving runners. Not a recipe for success, man. That's all I got. Well,
Connor Joe, one of the streakiest hitters in baseball. I mean, it's like a roller coaster with him. I mean, every April he's like, oh, you gotta pick him up on the wire in the fantasy league. And then by June he's dropped in, you know, 90% of those leagues where he's picked up, and then all of a sudden he he's the hottest hitter again. It's interesting. Some guys are just like that. You know, you don't really have an explanation for it, but
I swear he starts off every April batting like over 300, and then he ends the season batting. I swear his average has been 238 almost. It's like Chris Davis. Remember when Chris Davis was hitting like 244 every year or whatever it was?
It was like 237. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. 237 for like four straight years. It's impressive. So, got some stuff on Bednar here. Go for it, please.
Touch
on. Hopefully, maybe give some insight onto some of his struggles this year. Looked up, you know, his numbers on Baseball Savant, and there's some things that are kind of alarming that I want to touch on. So, in 2023, had a really good year last year. He threw his splitter 16.6% of the time to his curveball 25.4% of the time. His splitter had a .333 batting average against last year. His curveball had a .196 batting average against last year. Now you go to this year, 2024, and it's the usage is flipped. You got 22.6% splitter and 20.7% curveball. When last year he had much more success on his throwing his curveball than his splitter, this year they flipped the usage, and it's getting, the splitter's getting crushed this year. So 407 opponent slugging percentage in 2024 on the splitter. The opponent slugging percentage on his curveball this year is 125, and he's throwing it less than the splitter, and the splitter's getting crushed. And it doesn't really make much sense to me as to why they're having him throw that splitter so much and decrease the usage on the curveball. So something to look for going forward. Maybe they notice this trend and maybe flip it at the end of the year, see if that changes the results. And that's what I would do if I was looking at the numbers, and also some alarming numbers here, 10.5% barrel percent, which is double his barrel percent from 2023, which was 5.2. So he's just getting crushed. He's getting hit hard. 24th percentile average exit velocity up 2 miles per hour from last year. Last year, average exit velo was 88 on the dot. This year, average exit velo 89.9. So 2 whole miles per hour, which may not seem like a lot, but if it's your average exit velo that you allow, I mean, 2 miles per hour is very significant. So getting hit really hard this year.
That's interesting what you say about the splitter curve. We've noticed this with Mitch Keller, where he throws the cutter sometimes. When his unsuccessful outings, if you look at his cutter usage, it's always up. And it's like, why are we still using this pitch? I know it's like a different change the eye level, different type of fastball, because maybe his fastball doesn't miss a lot of bats, his four seam, but still the cutter is not working. I wonder if it's like a feel thing, you know, and does he not feel comfortable with his curveball this year? Is there something, you know, mechanically that he's just like, I just don't feel it. I don't feel comfortable with it. I don't know, but that's fascinating. I have not heard that one from Bednar yet. I mean, obviously we just talk about how he wasn't ramped up properly before the season, and he, you know, started off slow and he got hot, and then he's gone through stretches where they just keep throwing him in high leverage situations when he's struggling. So interesting. I really want to dive into that more and look into those numbers. Fascinating. But let's get into the Guardians, because we played the Cubs this week. We gotta drive down the highway, spit out the window, and forget about this one, because it was one to forget, let me tell you. I mean, getting swept by the Cubs, who were in last in the Central for a while, and now they're kind of surging. They're above 500 now, I believe. Now we go to Cleveland, who has the second best record. They would be, well, not the second best, but they'd be the 2 seed in the AL right now. They're 76-58. First in the AL Central. They're a game above Kansas City and I believe 3.5 above Minnesota. This is a really good team and they're just well coached. Steven Vogt just filled in for Terry Francona like easily. It was a perfect hire. They get the most out of their guys. I'm going to go through the pitching matchups. How about I just go through the pitching matchups real quick, and then we'll get some perspective on the offensive side from you.
That works. Friday,
we're recording on a Thursday, by the way. Thursday, both teams are off. Friday, we start game one. It's Ben Lively versus Bailey Falter. Ben Lively kind of fascinates me. This is a late bloomer, if you will. He was a Cincinnati Reds 2013 fourth rounder out of UCF. He's a big dude. And he's not overpowering either. He just knows how to use his stuff. He's 11-8 this year, 3.62 ERA in 23 games. He's really filled in nicely at the back of that rotation when guys like Tristan McKenzie has struggled. I saw him in AAA this year when I was up in St. Paul, man, he just looks like a different pitcher. We've got Gavin Williams was hurt for the first half of the season. I mean, this rotation's banged up, but one thing Cleveland does is develop arms. He's thrown 126 and two-thirds innings, 102 Ks, 1.19 whip. He limits barrels. That's one thing he does. He limits barrels, and he gets good extension. He's not going to overpower you. Here's his repertoire. A four-seam, sits around 90 miles an hour. He throws it 32% of the time. He's got a sinker off of that four-seam, different shape. Throws that at 90 miles an hour as well. Not 92, but 92.
Gotcha.
28% of the time. So he throws those similar amount of time. A sweeper that's at 79 miles an hour on average, 18% of the time. Then he's got a change, a curve, and a slider all below 10% of the time. They sit anywhere from 75 to 84 miles an hour. Like, this guy isn't like going to blow you away, right? But he's going to use the pitches that he has. And he's mostly just a four pitch guy. With a low 90s fastball, using a two-seam sinker more so this year than the previous years to try to get early count grounders. I think that's one way that Cleveland has utilized him. Hey, let's get some early count ground balls and get on at innings quickly. He throws both a slider and a curve, as I mentioned, and an improved changeup. That changeup is probably better than both of – he doesn't have the best feel for spin. All 45 to 50 grade pitches, man, average pitches. But he uses them well, and he gets outs, pitches to contact. So that'll be an interesting matchup. He faces Bailey Falter tomorrow. And then we've got Matthew Boyd on Saturday versus Luis Ortiz. Matthew Boyd is a sixth-rounder for the Blue Jays in 2013, both drafted in the same year from Oregon State. He was once a big arm for the Tigers, Blue Jays mostly.
He's been dead a little bit.
He's gone
for a while, and then he just pops right back up.
Yeah, I've always been
rotation.
Yeah, I've always been fascinated by him. I'm not gonna lie, but he's 1-0 with a 2.70 ERA. He's only started three games, 16 innings, 12 Ks, 0.9 WHIP. Small sample size, but he throws a four seam, 33% of the time at 92. He's got that low three-quarter slot from the left side, funky lefty. He's got a change. He throws 25% of the time at around 82. Slider around 80 at 18, doesn't have a hard slider, a sinker and a curve. He keeps hitters off balance with his fastball, which sits around 91 and 93, averages around 92, a 90 mile an hour sinker and excellent gyro slider, solid change and average to below curve. His curve is more of like a get me over pitch. He's just crafty, man. His fastball gets good carry. I've seen so many videos of him on Pitching Ninja where he's just like generating swing and miss at the top of the zone with that fastball. It's only sits at like 92. So Matthew Boyd will be interesting. These are the type of guys the Pirates struggle with. They struggle with everyone offensively, let's be real. But like, they'll go in and like hit Justin Steele hard, but they'll struggle with Matthew Boyd. Lastly, this game has been there isn't a projected starter for the Guardians on Sunday. So I'm going to go through this quickly. My guess, since they have today off, that's going to be Gavin Williams. Last week, they did a bullpen game where they started Nick Sandlin, who's their long man. Mitch Keller is starting for the Pirates. But Gavin Williams, let's talk about him real quick. He's a guy I really like. He's been hurt most of the year. He hasn't had his best year. He's 2-7 with a 4.99 ERA in 11 games. 58 Ks and a 1.41 whip. He's a first rounder out of Eastern Carolina, 2021 draft. He's a big dude. He's like 6'6".
Yeah, he's a big donkey.
Big donkey, man.
He's imposing on the mound.
Big time. And he uses his fastball, I'll tell you that much. He's got a four-seam that sits at 97. So different from Boyd and Lively. He gives you a little bit of a more of a power pitcher look. He throws his fastball over half of the time, 53% actually this year. His curve he throws sits around 80. That's a big velocity difference, 97 to 80. He throws that 20% of the time. His slider is a little bit harder. He throws it at around 89 miles an hour, 10% of the time. And then he has a cutter and a change. He's got plus fastball velo and extension. And he really stands out just for his size and arm strength, man. He's a big dude. He can generate swings and misses up in the zone. He's a guy that I think could be a top of the rotation arm given a full healthy season. That's the pitching matchups this weekend. I know I rambled a lot. Cinco, what do you got on the offensive side for Cleveland?
I'll give you some splits to start off. So, like you said, one of the better teams in all of baseball, definitely in the American League. And they started off really hot earlier in the year before the All-Star break. 721 team OPS before the All-Star break, and they have cooled off a little bit since then. 655 team OPS since the All-Star break. So not quite getting the Guardians offense that we saw earlier in the year. Also better at home, so that could even out. 730 OPS at home on the year, 677 road OPS. So they do like to hit at home. Got a little wind tunnel going out to right field for their lefties. And they like to hit at home. So they'll expect some more runs than they'd put up if this series was in Pittsburgh. They do hit lefties a little bit better than righties, 734 OPS against lefties versus 689 OPS against right-handers. So Bailey Falter.
He's the only lefty.
He's the only lefty, so that's good. But, yeah, you can expect some more production out of the Guardians lineup tomorrow against Falter. So something to look out for. Take you through some of their hitters here. First one, Jose Ramirez, one of the best hitters in all of baseball consistently for the last several years. Just little guy, but he packs a big punch. He's got 33 homers on the year, 32 stolen bases. He kind of does it all. Doesn't strike out, 12.2% K rate, one of the best in the league. And you put the power, the speed, and the contact ability. I mean, the guy's just an absolute stud. Does have a mean right hook. Tim Anderson knows about that. So yeah,
had to throw that in there.
Had to throw that in. Can't talk about the Guardians without that. So J-Ram's their guy. Then you got, I know, one of your favorite players, Stephen Kwan. Rich Homie Kwan. He's this year's version of last year's Luis Arias. Just doesn't strike out, doesn't swing and miss, hits the ball on a line just all the time. Give you some numbers here. 100 percentile in K rate, sits around 6%, which is unbelievable. 100 percentile whiff percent, 100 percentile squared up percent, meaning he's finding the barrel all the time. 84 percentile launch angle sweet spot. So again, like Brian Reynolds is hitting a lot of line drives, and he doesn't have much bat speed. So, hitting fly balls isn't going to do much for him. So hitting as many line drives as possible is what's leading to his success this year. Literally the worst, lowest bat speed in all of baseball, one percentile in bat speed. But again, you put the bat on the ball, find that barrel. He's a master at that. He's contact king. Then you got on the other side of the card, pretty much the opposite player of Stephen Kwan, is John Kenzie Noel. Guy coming on here, was a call up for the Guardians not too long ago, was just tearing it up in AAA, has one of the best nicknames in all of baseball, Big Christmas. And I will say I got the pleasure of being in the cage with him actually in December. The guy is just a beast. I mean, the definition of a beast. He's huge, swings the bat like a madman. Only guy that has a higher average bat speed than Noel in the major leagues is O'Neill Cruz. 99th percentile bat speed, 77.7 miles an hour on average. 99th percentile barrel percent, 18.8 barrel percent. So he hits the ball hard in the air, does a lot of damage. Again, kind of the opposite of Stephen Kwan. He will strike out, 31% K rate, which is very high. But, I mean, you take the strikeouts with the power production, and he's doing a lot of that right now. Definitely a scary guy to face in the middle of the lineup. So those are my three guys that stand out to me. They got, you know, they have other guys, Josh Naylor, Andrés Giménez, another contact guy playing second base. You know, I know you're an Andrés Giménez guy, being him coming up with the Mets, and you working for the Mets probably when he was in the minors with them.
He was in the he was actually in rookie ball when I was at Complex League, and I was a big fan. He's a great person too.
So. Absolutely, and one of I know Shore's favorite players of all time, Austin Hedges, is their catcher. So see a little bit of Hedgy, and yeah, I mean, got, you know, good bats across the board, but they are, you know, stumbling a little bit as of late, but again, way more dangerous at home and against lefties. So hopefully Falter can, you know, maneuver his way through the lineup tomorrow and get some outs.
Absolutely, man. That was a great roundup on the offensive side for the Guardians. I don't know if I want to say excited for this series, but, you know, Pittsburgh, Cleveland, it's going to be fun, and Cleveland's going to be at the least a fun team to watch. You know, we need big starts from Falter, Ortiz, and Keller this weekend. We have a chance to bounce back after a really bad divisional series against the Cubs. And then after that, we go straight to Wrigley on Monday to face the Cubs again, maybe get some redemption. But that's all we got to this week, folks, or for this midweek here after the Cubs series. As always, follow us on Twitter at Bucko Banner Pod, on Instagram at Bucko Banner, TikTok, Threads at Bucko Banner. Check out the Bucko Banner store, buckobanner.com. We got some awesome merch, the Rowdy shirts, the Jared Jones, Natasha Bedingfield shirts, the Nikki G shirts, the Bucko Banner merch. Go get your merch. Trust me, it is worth it. And on that note, Cinco, I want to just say thanks for coming on. Really appreciate you co-hosting with me today. It's been a pleasure. Had a lot of fun chopping it up with you as always. But until next time, let's raise it.
Let's raise it. It was a lot of fun, man. Appreciate it.
Rockin' 101, she compliment my taste. Whiskey in my lemonade, cause I like the way it tastes. Best seats at the Pirates game, they let me run the base. Yeah, my time is like my money, cause I can't afford to waste. Wifey is a lawyer, take my date to my dates. Order steak by the plates, and then case after case. Run my race at my pace, clear the grass of the snake.